This is the Skirted Roundtable. I'm Linda Merrill from Surroundings.
And this is Megan Arquette from Beach Bungalow 8.
And this is a very excited Joni Webb from Cota, Texas.
And Joni is very excited this week because we are welcoming the noted interior designer, Alessandra Branca, to the Skirted Roundtable. Thank you so much for joining us, Alessandra.
Thank you for having me.
Well, we're thrilled. We're going to be talking about your background, your new book, your gorgeous new book, New Classic Interiors. So as we do with all of our guests, we would love to hear about your background and how it is you born in Italy and are now here in the States, and what informs your design work today?
What informs my work today is still the fact that I study. I continue to read, to look, to see, to experience, to go to shows, to go to travel. And frankly, my clients really are the ones who also drive my work, because I have a wonderful mix of clients who have different interests, and that always is very exciting because it pulls you in different directions. It pulls you out of your usual. If you have a client who collects American furniture, or a client who really is a Francophile, or another one who loves contemporary art, it's very interesting to see how I grow from each of my clients' experiences as well.
And so tell us about your background. You grew up in Rome.
Background?
Yeah.
Well, let's see. I'm Italian. I'm the real thing. I was born and raised in Rome. I went to an American high school, so I learned English in high school.
I went to finish
university in the United States and went to school in Lake Forest in Illinois. And I was set up on a blind date with my husband, who was in business school at the time, and I sort of stayed. But I grew up in a very academic sort of environment. My grandfather was art historian and art critic for the Vatican newspapers. And my entire family is in academia. So it's sort of a very interesting jump that I would go to a field that is far from academic.
And your mother is a fine artist, right?
My mother is an artist. My grandfather was actually also an artist. And my mother, at the tender age of 58, who had always drawn and painted, just sort of decided to really commit herself to the task. And she's an amazing, amazing watercolorist who does natural history, basically does the entomology and botanicals, sort of the insects and bugs and flowers that live together. And she paints on parchment, and it's very cool because she's given it sort of an updated look.
Yeah, you feature your mother's work a lot. It's gorgeous. I love her work. I think it's really, it's a signature of yours, I would say.
You know what's interesting? I have never encouraged my clients to, all I've done is introduce my mother's work to the clients, and the clients absolutely embraced it. But it is a natural, what she does is very much in keeping with what I love, which is sort of a classic with a twist. And her botanicals, because they're framed in steel and then she gilds the edges, and they're these 9-piece works and 6 pieces and all these various combinations of numbers, they become a different thing, and they're still magnificent. They look like windows. Mm. They're just really cool, and I love that form of art.
You know, you were saying classic with a twist, which is, I think we all love what you do, because you do classic with a twist exquisitely, just incredibly well. What I was noticing as I was looking through the big, gorgeous book that you've just put out is your interiors have this really feminine feel, a lot of organic elements, but at the same time, I really noticed what I see as being a really strong architectural sort of framework beneath it all. Whether it's using a graphic, design, whether, it's a Greek key or it's a strong color, there always seems to be a strength in your design. Do you find that maybe from, your growing up in Rome, that you have this architectural vein going through your design?
There's no question. And in some cases, it's intentional. In some others, it's completely natural to me. But I grew up where architecture was all that we have left of mm-hmm. much of ancient Rome. So I realized that it is not only underneath, it is the foundation of everything we do.
Right.
And so my work you can't have one without the other. I tend to go into projects and always think, how do we fix this space? You know, if the space has been sort of, first I think of function, and then, but the natural inclination is to think of the architecture as a result of all that. When you're fixing things and making them right for someone and making the home suit their needs, or maybe even the needs of future generations, I always think of the architecture. And in some ways, it is a balance to me. I'm very motherly, I'm a mama, and I'm very organic in once on the one hand, but on the other hand, I'm very, very organized, and I like everything very clean and organized and set up and planned. There's a huge effort to making, you know, there's a huge amount of effort that goes into this effortless look that is the result of it. But you're right. There's definitely an architectural element. It's sort of the yin and yang. I think you can't have one without the other. I really don't. I think you have to respect the two. And if you don't have it in the physical architecture, then we create it in things like the carpets or the, you know, we work on things that are graphic that pull your eye into the space and sort of create that foundation that you need. Mm-hmm. And you'll notice that I do things like stripes and I do things like, you know, geometric patterns, and I do, mm-hmm. they're no different from Parquet de Versailles and all the other things, the elements that we use in life, you know, that are part of architecture exist in interiors.
And nature, even. I mean, that's what, you know.
I mean, every garden has a great pathway, and there's no difference in a home at all. It's all part of this sort of, linear way of looking at things. And I do think that you have to think from the moment someone approaches your home, whether it's a house or an apartment, it's the same thing as a garden. What does that first moment feel like? What does it look like? And then you take them there. And it's architecture, interiors, and theater all in one, because you're staging what someone will feel as they come through your life.
Mm. Alessandra, looking at your work, you know, it's all very detailed, and there's a strong use of fabrics and pattern. How do you approach a new job? I mean, what is your typical way when you get a new client? Do you go start with the fabric? Do you start with the rug? I mean, where do you start?
We start with what they're looking for in life. I mean, we really sit down, and it's no different than a business plan. I sit down with a client and walk them through where they are now and where they want to be. We look at their goals and the way they entertain and the way they feel when they're at home and how do they dress when they're home and how do they want to feel. I mean, we go through all that way before we ever get to fabrics and form. I mean, we really think of the space and how it relates to that person's life. And then we get, you know, the fabrics are very much, they follow. Because, for example, if someone said, well, I have two dogs and I have three cats and I have grandchildren or I have children that are run around, well, obviously pattern or color is going to determine those things that we use the most every day. Just because I think it's impractical to give someone an all-white living room when they have a big black lab. And they live in their rooms. You know, that's the difference. I make every effort, absolutely every effort, to make sure that people go to every room in their home. To me, a living room that is not lived in is an oxymoron. It's terrible. And, you know, when I grew up in Rome, there was no such thing as a front of the house, back of the house, you know, family room and all this stuff. You had a space that was where the whole family would be, and you would play cards there, you would read, you would invite people in and have drinks. It was very much the idea of the English drawing room. So the idea was this one space had to accommodate many needs, as opposed to the way we do things now, where we sort of, you find a lot of people have sort of a front of the house and back of the house. So the fabrics are determined, you know, my upbringing is that there was only one fabric. In other words, there was one story, and that story sort of meandered through the adjoining rooms. But the general gist was driven by that one room that got used a lot. So you collected things, and you had things like wonderful textiles that you collected in your travels. Or you'd have things that had been handed down, like a great fortuna or something like that. So a lot of my aesthetic is driven by this natural comfort with collecting and organizing all that collected sort of experience. And all the things that people bring to something, because in the end, it's all about the client. It's really your home, and the best homes are the ones that are absolutely portraits of those people. The ones that you look at the room and you go, oh my God, that's, I know exactly who that is. To me, that's much more important than anything else.
So do you have a preference between decorating a room from scratch, like someone who's just bought a new, you know, a new place and they have, they're moving in, they don't have anything, versus someone who is coming with a lot of family history pieces that may be kind of disparate and hard to put together?
You know what? I would say that they are equal. There is a challenge in each. It is absolutely every bit as challenging to give a personality to someone than it is to organize the multiple ones that we have. You know, I find that I have clients who have moved from larger homes into smaller homes, and they, you know, they're sort of empty nesting down, and you have to organize their things. But I also learned long ago that in the end, if I did not help them edit, I wasn't doing my job. So I didn't have to. Not every single thing had to exist in that space. So you sit through it and very delicately speak to a client and speak to things. It's a lot easier to have that conversation than it is to try to draw something out of someone when they have not really been able to articulate it themselves. In other words, you know what I mean? It's something, it's much harder to, people think it's a dream job to have a clean slate, but the truth is, it is as much of an effort to bring personality to that as it is to organize it.
Going back what you were saying about fabrics, I noticed that you do tend to use a lot of slip covers. Do you do that for a practical reason for dog stuff?
Oh, for everything, for life, yes. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've encouraged clients to get double cushion covers for sofas because I feel that that's, you know, there's things happen, life happens, and there's never, you know, if you can't get the same dye lot, you can't get the same fabric again, and there is no reason why we shouldn't plan that right from the start.
Oh, really?
You have
to order enough fabric to, like, recover the sofa?
To recover the seat cushions, the parts of a sofa that typically wear out the fastest or that take the biggest abuse are the seat cushions and the arms. And if you order, first of all, we do double cushions, but also we order things and we have enough fabric to redo an arm. It's a way to think ahead. You know, yes, it's kind of fun to think that you can redecorate every single time you wear out a sofa, but the reality is not that. And I've actually taken old sofas and that had terribly worn seats, like leather sofas, and redid the seats in paisley. And it's a great, and frankly, much more practical. It's a lot more pleasant to sit on a paisley seat than it is to sit on a, on leather and slip off.
Yeah, so leather.
One thing about, you have a chapter in your book about layout. But one thing I have noticed about your designs that I've always loved is your layout. You tend to put like a skirted table in the middle, and then you'll have seating on each side. I love that about your work.
Well, that was done very specifically because we ended up, for whatever reason, I ended up with a series of living spaces, living rooms, that were very long and sort of found that there was a lot of wasted space, and I feel that if you correct that geometry right away and create sort of a point of arrival where you have a skirted table, you can put books on that, you can put a tray of drinks or a tray of hors d'oeuvres, and then you do your seating arrangements around that, you end up sort of resetting the room. In other words, you now have sort of a wall or you have a center point. And I think that's a very successful thing. We've done it and people love it. It's also a great place for an informal dinner. If you have four or six people, you end up being able to have this other place to sit for dinner, which is wonderful. It warms a room up to have that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that idea. I'm waiting to get a client that I can copy that, you know, that geometry, like you say. And you also use a lot of wall coverings. There's very few white walls in your work?
Probably by design. I don't really have, we do upholstered walls. I love upholstered walls because I do spaces that are in urban settings. So you like to have a room become quieter. Surprisingly, I would say it is more often than I do a very neutral wall. It's just that because of the patterns in the rooms, people see the work as mostly patterned. But I tend to like, if you have a living room that's open to a hall, I tend to like to make it a neutral background and then to work my way, you know, to give it life with other things like the furniture or the accessories or the patterns on a chair or something. But bedrooms, for example, I think are fantastic upholstered. It's a wonderful space to create a cocoon in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, your bedrooms are gorgeous. You use a lot of canopies and faux canopies, you know, with the fabric behind them.
It's interesting. I never had thought of beds as a room, but a bed becomes a room within a room. It's mm-hmm. A lot of people like to have that wonderful sort of celebration of this moment. And it's something I had never thought of yet when I was younger. I personally have just a headboard. I like seeing the room entirely, but I have so many clients that come to me with four-poster beds or who want, you know, four-poster sort of feel. And it's been fantastic to work with all the different versions, like the half testers or full fort bed. Now I'm actually doing the opposite. I'm sort of bearing down those beds and just taking the bed and allowing the bed to exist without the sky and the canopy and the whole bit. And it's been very interesting to finally look at the form of a bed again as what it is.
Mm-hmm. Your lighting is another thing that I am really interested in, because I think so often a lot of designers sort of overlook the function and the power of lighting design. And in particular, I love the use of a scrim wrapped in like a drum shade that you use around a chandelier. I think that's so interesting.
It actually is a historical detail. In the 18th and 19th centuries, when large and big fancy homes in Europe, when people would leave for the summer, they actually made shades of linen or cotton that would be placed over the chandeliers so that the dust wouldn't collect and they wouldn't have to spend as much time cleaning them. Quite frankly, in my case, it came from the idea of a slip. I love the idea of insinuating something rather than having it be in your face. Mm-hmm. I think that it's just like a dress on a woman. I think transparency, and maybe as I get older this becomes truer, but seeing something through a veil or a few veils is always better than seeing it just right stark. And that chandelier that you are referring to was a very beautiful but very shiny and showy sort of 1940s chandelier. And I love the idea of a natural scrim sort of shade or shell that you would look through. And it makes the piece very architectural and also very sculptural. I've also done the slip covers on chairs for the same reason. The chairs were very, very important 18th century Chippendale chairs. And my client wanted to use them. And I said, well, they just look so fancy in a sort of informal dining area. So I said, why don't I do this? I did the scrim and then I piped it in velvet. And you look through and you see the chair, but it's just now it's insinuated as opposed to being in your face. It's just this really cool moment.
I'm looking at that picture right now and it's on page 93. And it's gorgeous. Is that a linen? That's a linen that
linen
you put on?
Yes. It's a linen scrim that's very almost like a cheesecloth. You know, just a very very thin, actually not that thin, but I mean it's thin enough that you see you have the light coming through it. And it just took this room that was an otherwise, you know, if you'd seen those chairs, they were just very fancy and very high style, and you couldn't imagine teenagers and their parents sitting there for dinner. And this way, as long as they don't wiggle around in the chairs.
Yeah.
We managed to make this room and really make it relaxed and comfortable. And this is the dining area off a library, which is the image before this. So it all came together. really cool room. And if you want, you could take them off and have a very formal evening. I love slip covering and making it so that you have a sort of day look and a night look. I think that's really wonderful. And I do it very often with dining chairs. It's a way to dress a room up and down, and I think it extends the life of whatever you have on your chair, and allows you to use a dining room more often. Too often we do a formal dining room, and then we don't go into it unless we have a formal occasion. And I think, you know, it's much better to have a dining room that has gorgeous chairs that happen to have slipcovers in either ticking or linen, and that you can use every day, and then otherwise have this really wonderful ta-da moment, than it is to be looking in on something that you rarely use.
The room is gorgeous. It's this room with a dining room with the Benison curtains and the tub, the quilted Benison sofa. Yeah. Oh.
There are 7 kids that grew up, that lived in this house.
Really?
7 children, yes. It was, and you know what, we did that because it actually literally got worn through, but we redid it exactly the same. The seats, everything was made exactly as you see it. It's a wonderful, wonderful, warm, fantastic room. I mean, it's, and it's so great to have a client. This client collects contemporary art and has some really great, they have Cindy Sherman's and Tsujimoto, and it's very unusual to combine the two, but it really did work.
Do most of your clients usually have a pretty good art collection, or is that something that you do with them, or how often are you buying art for?
I often buy art, but you know, it's a combination of the two. I really do. I have clients who walk in who have collections that we need to place and organize and sort of document and then organize into a new concept. And that's always fun, and it's exciting to do that. I also have clients who say, you know, why don't you suggest some things? We'd love you to tell us. And we go and find things. And so it's a wonderful sort of, I have clients who educate me, and I am able to, in my very modest way, educate them.
Do you have a fashion background? Did I read that anywhere?
I do. I went through the management training program at Magnans in San Francisco.
Right.
And that was my first job.
I can hear your love of fashion also, besides the architectural side. I'm hearing, you know, just when you're describing the scrim encased chandeliers, you know, and your approach to doing homes. I can hear your love of fashion in this as well.
Well, you know, it's not unlike, you know, the Prada, those Prada outfits that you would see that had sort of slips sticking out from underneath and all those sort of moments. I think it's the same. Fashion and interiors follow very, very much, very closely. And just as our clothing, we've been freed of wearing suits, and we can wear a jacket with jeans, and we can wear a satin shirt with high heels and jeans, the home has become very, very similar. And that's why I grew up in a world of fashion. So my mother worked in fashion. So I did have that background and that interest, and I always thought that's what I wanted to do until I got involved in it and I realized how impermanent it was and how I could never keep up. But also I wanted to come back to Chicago to be near my husband to be. So I came here, and fashion was not what Chicago's about, and yet I really had always loved antiques and loved furniture and loved art and prints, and so I sort of started this business based on prints, and then I decorated it as a home, and people started to love my interiors. So that's sort of how this all grew anyway. But the love of fashion is just truly the love of something visual. When you grow up in Italy and you have this heightened aesthetic sort of sense, you know, everything is attractive. You go to dinner and your food looks great and the room looks, you know, everything about life in Italy is visual. So it's very difficult to separate one from the other. You know, and I think that that's the same way it's becoming here. People are relaxing. They're not as worried about having sort of a front of the house and back of the house. It's all getting mixed. You now allow people into your kitchen. You know, kitchens used to be sort of verboten. No one would go to a kitchen many, many years ago. And now we entertain in our kitchen. We have dinner in the kitchen. It's been the best liberation we could ever have had.
I know. I think we have a lot of those leftover Victorian sort of concepts, you know, in America. Or we, you know, these ideas that things need to be so formal in these large homes.
You know, But you know what's so sad is when you go out to see, what are your memories of your best evenings with your friends or your best time with your friends? And it's very interesting. If I can get people to have more fun at home than anywhere else, I mean, I've done my job. And I think the more reasons to have someone come to you or be with you or share your space with someone, the better you'll be. And I don't think those times were times when they shared more publicly. They didn't share privately. And, you know, there used to be also, we are now in the kitchen. There used to be, you know, a very different way of life. And I think now that we can cook and you have guys cooking, and I have a 22-year-old who loves to cook and he watches that cooking channel all the time, and he now pays attention to dishes and cares about what a glass looks like. Well, you know, those are all the little things that have sort of evolved from all these various little revolutions. So not only do we pay attention to how we look, but now we've been taught to be free and enjoy how our table looks and how our dishes look and how we set something, you know, all of that. It's fantastic.
Well, that's interesting that, you know, when you were saying that about the front of the house and then people didn't come to the back, although it made me think that in those days, the woman of the house, usually she would receive her friends in her bedroom. And, you know, and so I think that, as you said about like your son's cooking, you know, the mixing of the sexes as friends and the social, you know, breakdown, we don't entertain in our bedrooms anymore. And the problem is a lot of people think of the bedroom as the last place to decorate, kind of for that reason. Well, nobody sees it. And so the focus is on the kitchen.
I've had clients who literally come to me and they absolutely do up every other area, and then their bedroom is like the attic.
Yeah.
To me, my bedroom is literally, I could live in a studio apartment because I come home, I look at my mail, I you know, when I'm, we're now sort of empty nesters, so, you know, you come home, you look at your mail, you have dinner, and then you go to bed. I mean, it's not like... I don't sit around, I mean, maybe because I have a 12-hour day, I have a little bit of a different lifestyle, but the truth is, you know, to me, a bedroom is so important, and you spend more time in a bedroom than you do in any other room of the house.
Right.
Than your kitchen. So I've always tried to liberate my clients and say, why wouldn't your bedroom be wonderful? You know, it should be wonderful. And, you know, once upon a time, you entertained in your bedroom because in certain environments, the houses were such that the front of the house was shared with other family members. So your bedroom became like an apartment. So that was, especially in 18th century France and England, 17th and 18th century France and England, they shared spaces. So you would see, what people don't realize now is we see these very grand, large, wonderful houses. Well, those houses were shared by numerous family members who were basically raising their families. And then the common living areas were shared among them. The staff would be shared, everything else would be shared, but your private quarters, which would be basically your bedroom suite, was basically the only private space you had. So it was very, very interesting that that's where that lifestyle, there's a wonderful book called The Age of Comfort that's out right now that I've been reading, and it talks about this, you know, just lifestyle and this idea of comfort. We have evolved from it, but we have also abandoned many of the good sides of it. In those days, people would entertain, they'd play cards. You also ate in every room. You didn't have a dining room. Dining rooms are very recent, you know, invention. I mean, they're really 19th century. Because until then, you just set up a table, you set up a screen, and you were done. That was your dining table. And your dining table itself was never very pretty. It was always your linens that counted. So they put up, you know, a very simple thing, and there you were. And think of how freeing that would be. Then you could really entertain in your bedroom.
That's true.
I could eat and sleep in the same space.
Well, I think the first time I became aware of you as, you know, designer was when your house was published many years ago. And you're still in the same house, correct? It's a gorgeous...
I've been in the same house for 20 years.
Yeah, it's gorgeous. And it's in the book. And I didn't realize it was designed or remodeled by David Adler.
The house was lived in by David Adler for 15 years. And,
wow.
And his wife died. His wife, Catherine, died, and he moved out and went to live with his sister.
Yeah, I know. Wow, that's incredible.
He was a very poor architect. He didn't put very much. What he did do is it is a series of townhouses, and he removed the stairways that went up to the piano nobile to the first upper floor, and uh-huh. he made all the entrances enter on the ground level, which was a big move in the 20s, because, you know, once upon a time our streets were not as pretty, and you would not have wanted to come directly off the street into residence. But he removed all those staircases, and that was probably the single biggest change he brought to that structure. And then he did a little bit in the house, not frankly very much. But, yeah. You know, Mies van der Rohe, for example, lived in a classic old co-op here. So, you know, what you did at work didn't necessarily happen at home.
Mm-hmm. But it's a gorgeous, house. It reminds me a little bit the way it's laid out of Charlotte Moss's townhouse, you know, with the second floor, your main living space.
But yeah, I think all townhouses have become that way. You'll see the same thing with Muriel Brandolini also lives in a townhouse. There are many designers who live in townhouses. And it was a wonderful way to live in the city with children, because my children basically did have a little bit of a backyard and a little bit of space to expand to. But the living, you know, basically my kitchen and my family room library are on the first floor off a garden. And then you go upstairs and you have the dining room and living room and a service kitchen. So it's been wonderful. We really do live in every part of it. And so
the backyard is gorgeous.
You know, my
the whole
kids
house is gorgeous.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. If walls could speak. When you've had three kids in 3 years, my kids now tell me all the things. What's amazing is to find out that they've had parties when we were not there.
Oh, my gosh.
And that it survived.
Yeah, I know. I'm going through that stage right now, actually.
Amazing.
How do you deal, Alessandra, with clients, which I'm sure you've had because we've all had them, who insist that they can't do certain things because my kids will destroy it? And as a mother, how do you work with people to realize that your kids aren't necessarily, you can do beautiful things that are not going to be completely destroyed by your kids?
You know what I very often tell people, for example, my experience, which is to have two sons and then a daughter, who were 15 months apart, and all their friends lived with us as well. And, you know, if you think ahead and you give them a space that is their space, and you allow them a place to be crazy and to jump up and down and do whatever it is at different stages of their lives, then I think they will respect the space that you ask them to respect. We always consider, for example, children's rooms. I don't believe in doing a sort of a juvenile room. I really believe a bedroom for a child should be thought of as a studio apartment, and that's the space where they go to entertain their friends. And so we often do trundle day beds that look like sofas, and whether the child is 4 or 18, and I have children who have gone from those two ages that are clients' children, we make it so that the room is generally neutral, and then with a little bit of a change, it goes from one age to the other. Well, when you've done that and you've considered your child, they will consider you. And I think it works. It really is interesting. I mean, my children absolutely know how to behave. And when they have a party, they, you know, they do their thing. You know, they're not, they have moments when they're behaved, and then they have moments when they're kids, they're people, they're their own age. But I, you know, I knock on wood, we had a couple of windows broken over the years with baseballs, and that was it. We did have one child of a friend of my son's who somehow managed to break the same ottoman numerous times. He'd stand on it and break the leg and blah, blah, blah. But literally, otherwise, there were very few things. And I don't want a life without those things anyway. The price that I'm paying to have kids is nothing compared to the joys that kids bring. So if a client sits there and complains and says, well, you know, I can't do this, I can't do that, in the end, you know what? These are the small prices we pay to have our children home. It is so much better to have the home that all the kids come to than not be that house.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God. Any day. So we do slipcovers, and we do, you'll notice that sofas will have pattern when they're in family rooms. There are a lot of things you can do that can make it still attractive, but be practical and not have you know, giving them beanbags.
What about this? You did this in your book, a room, a playroom that was a sunroom, and it's tented in white. I've got to find it. I don't have it right open, but it's amazing. And when I looked at it, I thought, oh, my God, how do you keep that clean with three little kids in there?
You know, oh, there's actually four. One of them was napping. Those are my godchildren. You know, the room is fantastic because it's got a vinyl floor. The kids don't wear their shoes in that room. They know that. There's a movie screen that comes down behind the curtain, and they can put out all these bean bags that we did in all different colors. And the kids can watch a movie. Those bookshelves are organized to death. Every toy has been put into, and they've been taught to take, it's very Montessorian. You take out the basket you're going to use, you play, you put it back, and then you take the second one out. So it's very, you know, but the room is very neutral. It's very gender neutral. It's mm-hmm. age neutral. It was a terrace that was unused. And so it ended up being this wonderful experience of a room that has tremendous light, and that sort of it branches all the different ages, because these children can be teenagers and hang out in this room. It's very, it looks very much like a futuristic room, you know. Like,
it is so cool.
Well, the nice thing is, you know, I've always said this is a great room you could have a luncheon in. I mean, it's a great,
yeah.
It's been a great room for birthday parties because of
yeah.
course. You could do all sorts of stuff, and that's just vinyl flooring. That's nothing fancy. Literally.
Oh, you could dress that up for an adult in an hour. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, literally. And you can see we put a lot of money into the light fixture.
I just can't figure out how you tented it. That's what sort of boggles my mind, how that whole structure happened.
Well, you know, we have a wonderful woman I've worked with for about 15 years who does all my upholstery, and she's now tented so many rooms. I love tenting. There's something very cool about it. If you don't have architecture, that's an example of where you can create something out of a box. And it's very celebratory. There's something really fun about tenting a room. It must be a past life thing. I absolutely have to have lived in tents at some point, because I'm very happy with them. And this is just white duck. It is nothing fancy with grosgrain ribbon. I mean, this is plain. This is really all in the ideas. The next picture is one of the bedrooms that's off of that. That's that little boy's bedroom, which looks right. And if you look in the picture on the right hand side, you can see his little sisters.
Oh, I see it.
You see
it. That's hysterical. That room is right off of it.
Yes, exactly.
You see her, Megan? She's
peeking through a window.
Peeking through. It's a wonderful shot to have that little moment. It's like an elf.
Uh-huh.
We wouldn't let her be in the room, so she had to get to find her.
Alessandra, what if you had to name a favorite fabric house? Could you do it? Would you be able to?
Oh God, are you kidding? You know what I would say? I love any fabric. It's not really a fabric house. I'm not vendor driven, first of all, which means you could test me. And as much as I have a great knowledge of materials, I don't really care where they come from. I care that they feel and look right. I like natural fibers most of the time. I would say very rarely do I pick something and I'm told, oh, well, that's, you know, whatever. It's always linen, cotton. It's pretty much always, or wool. I mean, I would say, and then the other thing that attracts me to a fabric is the quality of the pattern and the dye and the weight of it. I think that's what lasts. But, you know, if a cotton velvet is from one place or another, it doesn't make a difference. I love cotton velvets. If I want just a linen duck or a cotton duck, to me, it's really a question of the service, which we get fantastic service from the showrooms. And really, the truth is, in the end, who has it? You know, but I don't really pick. I love companies like Claremont and Fortuny and Chelsea and Benison, but each of those companies has things that are just distinctive to them. You know, and I love Quadrille for prints. You know, I love historical prints. I love Old World Weavers. I love Lee Jofa. I mean, it's funny. I wouldn't say that there's a single showroom where you find all things that I use. You know, that's one thing in designing a collection. I would say what would drive a collection of Broncas is that it would all be based on the same principles. It would be quality. It would be probably all natural based. And I love handiwork. You know, when you're able to see some embroidery, but not foofy, you know, just really pretty embroidery here and there. I think that's always wonderful. But, you know, for example, Etro Paisleys are represented by 3 or 4 different showrooms. And so we buy them from whomever has it. You know, it's not a question of Etro necessarily. It's a question of the weight. De La Cueña is another company in Spain that makes beautiful paisleys that we've used. And Holly Hunt, for example, tends to have really wonderful scrims in her Great Plains collection. But I don't really look at, you know, I don't sit there and say, okay, we're going to do just a Fortuny room or just, you know, a Cotton Duck room. It's just whatever works for that project is what's right. I do a lot of custom fabrics, so that's why things like, you'll see a Benison pattern, but I have done it as a custom fabric. So that colorway doesn't actually exist in their line. And I just happen to love to make things custom. It's just part of my, just another way to complicate my life. I really, you know, I think of all the layers. To me, when you do your work, regardless of whom does it, I think it's important that you think of design as looking through the lens of a camera. And you go in, you focus in, and then you zoom out. And it should look as good at every single step of that way. That, to me, is great work. You know, it's got to pass the test of being under a microscope, and it's got to pass that first impression. And that's the way work has depth, and that's the way work has time. There was a photo in the book that I showed mostly because I felt it was important to show a room that I had done over 25 years ago.
I love that picture.
But that, you know, and you could tell it's a photograph that we had to scan because obviously I don't even have the negative anymore. It's on page 97. And that room was done, I hadn't even had a child yet. In fact, a friend of mine was reminding me, I was literally, this is over 25 years ago.
Unbelievable.
And if you look at that room, there is sisal in a geometric pattern, so it was all there. The French chairs are done in that wonderful multicolored stripe that's on a cotton. There's the fabric is a braconnier, and I upholstered the wall panel with that, then did that wonderful chinoiserie mirror. The chairs, the sofa, I couldn't find, if you see the chairs on the right and left, we couldn't find a geometric pattern that I liked, so I took a linen fabric and I had it quilted in Chanel quilting in that sort of teal green color, and that's very modern and very different. I mean, this room could be today. Every part of it.
I looked at this and I realized you were probably in your 20s when you did this.
Oh, you're so sweet.
You know, on page 184, you use the quilting, too. And it's funny, when I saw that and was reading about how you had quilted the pattern on the fabric that you used on the sofas, I thought, wow, I never would have thought to do that. I never would have thought that it would come out looking this good. And so I noticed that you do that. Again, I think that's another part of that architectural, sculptural, multidimensional thing coming in. It's very
textural. It's also very practical. You know, it's very, very practical. Quilting a fabric really extends the life of the fabric. It's an old trick. It's also sort of old school, which I love. Mm-hmm. You know, the idea of quilting was such a thing that used to be done, I think, in the 60s and 70s. And it's such a fun detail to pull up. But it you're right. It gives depth. It outlines. It's graphic. And in that sense, it does enhance something. But it also happens to be practical, which I love. You know, this is a family room. This is a room where children play and jump. And believe me, we have a photo, in fact, as we were leaving the shoot, if you turn the page, Thibault was leaving, and he looked down, and he could see those little feet. And the client's son had gone and lay down on the sofa with his feet up.
Thank God his feet were clean.
Oh, look at them.
They're perfectly clean.
It's like a puppy. He's going to be 18 feet tall. Yeah. But it was so cute because Thibault ran back and took that photo because that was, I wanted so much for this to be the cover. Because this to me was what my work is about. which is no matter how pretty it is, it has to work, and it's got to be space that makes you want to put your feet up and stay. I mean, that to me is everything. And unfortunately, we ran all the focus groups, and of course, showing the bottom of your foot is very insulting in pretty much every culture. I obviously didn't get the memo, as I've seen the bottom of my children's feet for years.
You know, if you turn the page, I guess it's the Benison bedroom, but that artwork with the press, is that a collage?
Hear the story of that piece. That piece is supposed to be a wedding. It's three-dimensional. It's a very, it's in a shadow box. It's sort of a piece that's sculpture. It is a wedding dress made up of the death announcements of brides who have been burned by their husbands in India.
Wow.
But what an incredibly powerful, wonderful piece when you look at it.
It's beautiful. It's beautiful.
That's the same client who collects Cindy Sherman. They mix it up, and it really looks, when you look at the image on the right, you know, forgetting the one in the bedroom, it's beautiful. But when you see it with that beautiful, that 19th century chest, with the black marble top that sort of looks like the dress, it all makes sense. And that's a way that you can take something very classical. You know, this bedroom is a very sort of dreamy bedroom, and it's very 19th century French looking, and English French, whichever. But it's definitely that sort of soft room. And then all of a sudden you bring in today, and it looks fantastic. It really married beautifully into the room.
And
they have many of those instances. These clients collect really cool pieces. So it's been fun to sort of juxtapose those two.
This book is such a great example of that exactly. We've talked about this on our show before, of bringing art into a space that, you know, so many people think they need to buy the art to match the room sort of thing. And this is such a, your book is filled with wonderful examples of just gorgeous art brought in, not to match the room, but it is art.
People who collect art don't think of it the way we, you know, I'll look at art as a graphic and as a color and as a pattern. I separate myself from its number one, I always separate myself from its value. Because whether it's something your child did or something that Picasso did, if it's important to the client, that's what I care about. So that's the first thing. But the second thing is, there are homes that are driven by the art, and that's because they are thought of as galleries. Mm-hmm. And very often you don't see those homes being spaces where people put their feet up. And most of my clients, this client came in when I first did his first project. I've done five projects for him. His first project, he had one of those sort of ta-da kind of spaces where everything was white and here was the big painting and here was the big this and blah, blah. And it was very striking and very beautiful, but it wasn't lived in at all. So it was very interesting to be able to evolve with him and to have, yet he collected that beautiful English furniture with beautiful rugs, but it was all done with very stark sort of sofas, very little seating. You know, it was a very different aesthetic. And he said, well, here's my living room. I never go there. You know, that was exactly, you know, what I didn't want to think. That's not what it's for. Mm-hmm. So the first thing we did was taught him to live, essentially, and to be able to have him command the way he would like to be in the space rather than the space command his lifestyle.
That's great.
Something that too many people forget. You know, decorating is great, but if it doesn't work for you, it's not good. It has to make you feel better, and it has to make you live better long term.
And you know what? We're at the end of our time.
No,
Joan.
No, we're not.
Yes, we are. Sorry to be that person, but I am.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Well, thank you so much for having me. It's so nice to speak to people. I always speak and see the written word, but I don't hear the voices. You know, it's great. This is a great format, I think.
This has been the Skirted Roundtable with Megan Arquette from Beach Bungalow 8, Joni Webb from Coat to Texas. I'm Linda Merrill from Surroundings, and this week we were joined by interior designer Alessandra Branca. Thank you so much for joining us. You can visit us online at www.skirtedroundtable.blogspot.com or download our podcasts from iTunes. Search for the Skirted Roundtable. Thanks again, and we'll be back soon.